Hello, everyone, and welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire reread podcast. My name is Harrison.
I'm Madison.
I'm Brooke.
And we are the Readers on the Wall.
This is Aria 4. So, Yorin, Aria, and the Band of Misfits have reached a small river near the God's Eye and quickly find the decaying body of a soldier in the water, which very nicely sets the scene. They can't cross the river where they are, and after sending out men to search for alternative routes, Yorin believes their only choice is to follow the river north to where he remembers a small town in Holdfast, hoping to buy a boat once there and sail across the God's Eye to Harrentown. Then, while there, either buy new mounts to continue on or stay at Harrenhal, because Yorin still believes Harrenhal is under the control of Lady Went, until they're ready to move on. Hot Pie worries about the ghosts that are at Harrenhal, but surprise, surprise, Yorin doesn't give a care. Aria then briefly sums up the story of Harrenhal for us again and adds in that old Nan told her ghost stories about men going to sleep in the castle and come morning, they're found dead, all burnt up. But Aria doesn't really believe her, besides all that happened a long time ago. Aria decides that going to Harrenhal wouldn't be too bad because she could reveal herself to Lady Went and Lady Went's knights would take Aria home to Winterfell because knights, all knights are nice and would escort a small child home to Winterfell. On the way to the Holdfast, they come across a few houses. All are deserted with no possessions, but the fields and houses themselves are not burnt and destroyed. So Yorin believes that the inhabitants probably just abandoned them and they met them at the king on the King's Road at some point. They come upon the tiny village that surrounds the Lord's Tower House, and yet again, it's absolutely deserted. This makes Yorin slightly uneasy, but right now, it's all they've got. So he splits the group into teams to explore the area, see if they can't find any supplies or the boat like they were looking to buy. Aria gets paired with Gendry, Hot Pie, Lami, and Woth, and are given instructions to go check out the lakefront for a boat. As they're going through the village to get to the lake, Aria starts to become just as uneasy about it being deserted as when they came across the burnt Holdfast where they picked up the crying girl and her mother who died shortly after. She questions what could scare people so much into leaving their homes. They get to the lake, and it's the biggest lake that Aria's ever seen, with no shore on the other side in sight. Despite there being docks in an inn along the shoreline, there was only one small rowboat on the rocks under the inn with a bottom rotted out. Aria takes a minute to stand in the warm, fresh water and wash the dirt and sweat off her face before Woth yells at her to continue searching. They find some nails, sails, and a mother cat with kittens, but no boats. Everyone meets back up in the middle of the village, and Yorin reports that the Lord's Tower is empty. Whether the Lord fled for safety or to fight, no one can say. But the watch will stop there for the night, and there is still some game around and fish in the God's Eye, so they'll be able to eat. Aria mentions that there are no boats, and they discuss what to do. Cost says they should patch the rowboat, which is a great idea, except only about four of them will fit in. Lami suggests building their own boats, which Yorin quickly shoots down because nobody knows how to actually build a boat. And Gendry suggests building rafts, which Yorin wants to think about more while they stay the night in the Holdfast with the gates barred. Aria begins to protest, saying that they shouldn't stay there because the people who lived there did not stay there because they were obviously afraid of something. However, she backs down once everyone starts making fun of her for being scared, and Yorin mentions that the villagers were probably just scared of the war and that they are the Night's Watch. They take part in wars so that they take no part in wars, so they have no enemies, which makes Aria think, and that means no man's our friend. Hint, hint. The keep wasn't much, but it was better than sleeping outside like the group is used to. And while exploring, Garen found a trap door with a tunnel in the barn that leads out to the lake. Yorin instructs them to cover the trapdoor with a wagon to make sure no one comes popping out of it, divided the group into three watches, and sent Tarber, Kurtz, and Cutjack to the abandoned tower house to watch from above. Kurtz has a hunting horn he can sound if there's danger. They get all their stuff inside, and Yorin allows them to have a cook fire. Koss grabs a goose and two chickens, and Arya's group pulls kitchen duty. She's supposed to pluck the feathers off of the birds, much to her dismay. She really wanted to chop the wood instead. Despite a warm meal and full bellies for the first time in a while, it doesn't seem to help raise everyone's spirits. Aria pulls the second watch, so she decides to try and get some sleep. But she can't, so she decides to borrow Yorin's whetstone and sharpened needle. Popeye watches and asks where she got Needle. At first, she becomes defensive, but eventually they begin to talk, even though Arya knows she should just keep her mouth shut. And she decides to lie about having big, scary brothers that taught her how to kill people who bother her, and Popeye reluctantly leaves her alone. She wishes the girl they rescued would be quiet and stop crying all the time, which I thought was kind of funny because that's what her sister seemed to do. Arya sleeps eventually and dreams of a wolf howling and wakes startled, waking everyone up thinking that there was a wolf. They try to tell her it was a bad dream, but Arya is insistent something is wrong or someone is coming, and they don't believe her until they all hear Kurtz's hunting horn sound danger. They all leap out of bed to get dressed and see what the matter. Arya runs for the gate and runs past the three baddies chained up in the cage. Biter throws himself against his chains, and Jaqen H'ghar tries to get Arya to free him, telling her a man can fight. She ignores him. She gets up to the parapets, but she's so small she can barely see over the wall. She's got to, like, climb up half of it so she can see, pop her head over to see what's going on. At first, Arya thinks she sees lots of lantern bugs, but she quickly realizes that those are not bugs, but men with torches galloping through the village, setting it alight. A column of men start moving towards the holdfast. Arya thinks one of the men is carrying a red banner, but with all the fires, it's hard to tell. The fires are quickly spreading from house to house. Everyone is awake on the catwalks or trying to rein in the frightened animals. Yorin is shouting commands, and suddenly the frightened girl is clutching Arya's leg. Arya tells her to run and hide and pushes her away. The riders reach the gate of the holdfast. A knight in a tall helm with a spiked crest demands that they open the gate in the name of the king, to which old Dryzen yells down what we're all thinking, "Aye, and which king is that?" Yorin demands that they stop raising the village because there are no town folks left there. The knight with the spiked helm asks if Yorin is one of Lord Beric's cravens. If that fat fool Thoros is in there, ask him how he likes these fires. Yorin replies that there's no such men there, only boys bound for the night's watch, and he holds up his cloak he has fashioned to his staff to show the riders it is the color black for the night's watch. But the knight replies, "Or black for House Dondarrion." Arya can then see what the rider's banner is, a golden lion on red. When the knight describes Lord Beric's sigil as a purple lightning bolt on a black field, it makes Arya flash back to the day of the Hand's tourney when she spilled the juice on Sansa's gown, and how there was a knight with the same sigil that Sansa's friend Jane was in love with, and how it felt like that happened a lifetime ago to a different person. It happened to Arya Stark, the Hand's daughter, not Arya, the orphan boy. The knight and Yorin go back and forth before Yorin finally demands to know who commands the riders, and it is revealed to be Sir Armory Lork, bannerman to Lord Tywin Lannister of Casterly Rock, the Hand of the King, the true King, Joffrey. Arya wants to call out to the men outside the gates to look with their eyes and see that Yorin and his group are not lords or knights, and Gendry whispers back that he doesn't think that they care. When Arya really looks with her eyes at the men, she can tell that Gendry is right. Again, Yorin and the riders go back and forth before Lork tells Yorin to declare themselves as rebels and that old men and boys die the same. Sir Armory raised his fist and a spear whistled through the air, probably intended for Yorin, but it hit Woth square in the throat, killing him, and orders his men to kill them all. More spears fly and Yorin calls the boys to arms, including telling Lami to grab the spear from Woth's neck and tells him to defend the walls wherever the soldiers come over. Arya grabs Hot Pie before he's speared, clutching his dagger. He tells Arya he doesn't know how to sword fight, and Arya lies to him that it's easy as she notices the first hand crest the top of the parapet. She steadies herself by remembering Cyril Farrell's teachings, fear cuts deeper than swords, and she slashes at the hand screaming, "Winterfell," causing the enemy to fall. She whirls around to defend herself against someone from behind and nearly pokes him between the eyes, but he falls back before she actually touches him. And Hot Pie finally defends himself, hacking at the soldier's hands until he finally lets go. Even though the riders didn't have any ladders, it seemed like there was no end to the climbers. Yorin was met by the knight with a spiked helm, but Yorin tangled him up with the cloak on a stick and stabbed him between the armor. Yorin and his men are holding their own, but not without losses like Dobber and Quile. Arya passes a boy no older than Jon. She isn't sure if she killed him, but she could have. Even though she feels sorry about it, she's there killing other soldiers, shouting Winterfell, while Hot Pie is standing beside her shouting, "Hot Pie!" Gendry steals a dead man's sword and jumps down into the yard. Arya jumps down to join him and lands expertly like Cyrio taught her. But surrounded by death and destruction, she's not really sure what to do next, until Yorin comes out of nowhere. "Boy!" he yelled the way he always yelled it, telling Arya that they've lost and to gather everyone they can and get everyone out through the trapdoor in the barn. Arya grabbed Gendry and they found Hot Pie. They came across Lami bleeding from a spear thrust through his calf and Garen, who was too injured to move. While running to the barn, Arya spotted the whimpering girl and grabbed her too, although she wouldn't even walk after Arya slapped her, so Arya had to drag her to the barn. Hot Pie stepped back out of the barn and told Arya that Lami was gone and to leave the girl behind if she wouldn't run, and then left Arya and the girl behind anyways. But the ever-so-bold Gendry came back for them, throwing the girl over his shoulder. The barn is on fire. It's hot, full of smoke. The animals are screaming in terror. Arya thought about the poor animals and then saw the wagon with the three baddies. Biter is pulling on his chain so hard his arms are bleeding. Rorge is shouting curses, and Jaqen is shouting, "Boy, sweet boy," to get Arya's attention. Gendry says the tunnel is narrow and asks how to get the crying girl through. Arya says just push her or pull her, basically do whatever it takes. The three baddies are still trying to get their attention, but Gendry ignores them, telling Arya to go first, then the crying girl, then him. Arya remembers Gendry was splitting wood earlier, and that's where he left the axe. He told her that she should free the donkeys first because there isn't enough time to save the animals and the three guys in the wagon. Arya tells Gendry to get the girl out and runs for the axe. The air outside is cool and refreshing after the barn inferno, but all the men around are dying. Kos threw down his blade to yield and was struck down anyways. She couldn't spot Yorn, but she found the axe, wrenching it free, while a mailed hand grabbed her. Without thinking, she swung the axe between his legs. She couldn't see his face, but she saw the blood dripping from his breeches. Going back into the barn, thick with smoke and heat, and the screams of the animals was the hardest thing Arya ever had done. But she darted through the doors and crouched low to avoid the thickest smoke. She could see a donkey surrounded by fire, she could smell the burning hair, and the barn was falling apart as the fire tears through it. The smoke was so thick she couldn't see the wagon, but she could hear Biter's screams and crawled towards them. She got to the wagon, and without a word, because it was too hard to talk, she threw the axe in. She ran to the tunnel, and after a minute, she could hear the wood of the wagon explode behind her. Arya dove into the tunnel and fell 5 feet, getting dirt in her mouth, but she didn't care because it was cool and tasted like mud and worms and life. She adjusted needle and crawled a while before there was a terrible sound that sounded like a great roar and a cloud of hot smoke and black dust billowed up behind her. Arya held her breath and kissed the mud on the floor of the tunnel and cried, for whom she could not say. And scene.
And yes. Scene.
So exciting. Yeah.
So this is, man. So trudging through all the Arya chapters before we get to this one is so good. Oh my gosh. It's an incredible chapter to me. I don't know. I love the whole beginning of it is just some great scenery. What's it called? Just all the scenery, you know, in the chapter, just talking about how beautiful it is. It's just like, oh, like I want to live at this lake. Like,
I know.
It seems like a great place. And then
Like reference my map at first because I was like, I never really thought about there being a lake at Harrenhal. And I look on the map and I'm like, holy crap, it's like Lake Michigan in the middle of the country.
Right?
Yeah, that's one thing I do kind of like about Arya's story, actually. If you read through it and just keep track of where she's going, you could basically map the whole thing out.
Yeah.
And see exactly where she's at. It's pretty cool. Actually, in my book, I actually drew a map on the front of this chapter to be like, she's right here. Yeah, like I love how we go from this, you know, they're just scrounging, you know, they're trying to find supplies, they're in Skyrim, you know, just opening up stuff and, you know, collecting all this inventory and stuff, and then it just transitions to this intense battle.
And
I'll tell you, this is probably one of the better actions in my mind. I'm gonna be that guy, it's a criminally underrated action scene. People just don't understand how good it is, you know. And part of the reason I think it's so good is because it's just like bam, 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 bam. Like there's not a lot of lingering in my mind. Like, you know, like there's things that are just constantly happening, and the pacing of it all felt really, really good to me.
Yeah, for sure. Yes.
Most definitely. So, sorry, I didn't want to cut you off there, Brooke. But
I was
so excited about it.
So, yeah, I thought it was a really good chapter. My summary was a little bit wordy, but I just felt like there were so many important things that happened. But my main discussion question I wanted to ask you guys, do you think it was naive of Yorin to keep assuming that the Night's Watch would receive shelter and support, for example, from the Lord of the Small Holdfast near the God's Eye or Lady Went of Harrenhal? considering the circumstances of the world currently and the trouble they've already run into.
Man. But by the way, when he was like, oh yeah, we're going to head to Harrenhal. I'm like, no!
I know, don't do it!
She's not there! You know? Was it naive for him? I mean, God. It's kind of tough because I feel like I understand why Yoren has this mindset. I mean, he's been doing this job for 30 years. He's been going out into Westeros, probably the best job in the Night's Watch. Just want to state, I'd be totally down to be this guy.
Yeah,
the recruiter. Oh yeah,
yeah, right. And he's going out, and I feel like, I don't know, I feel like he gets a lot of support from the people. Like, oh, he's a member of the Night's Watch. Come on down here. Let's beat this guy. Let's send our crappy, you know, guys in the basement with him to, you know, he can take care of them.
Yeah, it's like a give and take thing. Like, he shows up and they invite him in, they give him some food, they listen to him stories, and then he gets to take the gutter rats out of their town, you know, like.
Right. Well, you know, I think I am going to say he was kind of naive to assume that, you know, well, especially even like when they show up, they're in the tower house, the Lannisters ride up and Aemory Lorch is telling him like, hey, you know, who are you? Blah, blah, blah. He's like, oh, you know, we're not a part of this. Don't worry about it. You can leave now. Like for him to
assume, it's just like, okay, we're all good now.
Well, it's just the thing is, it's like, okay, look, Yoren, like you know, you're a small little thing. He went to that one inn and, you know, that's basically what they were talking about. He's like, yeah, I remember being used to the, you know, people used to invite me into all their castles and they would take care of me and blah, blah, blah. And it's not that way anymore. So that's a small hint towards it. Also the fact that the Kingsguard are the city watch is basically chasing you, trying to get Gendry away from you. You know, that should be a hint that, you know, like they're
not
willing to mess
on your side anymore.
Yeah, right. They're willing to mess with you. I mean, you literally had to pull a dagger out of this guy's balls and basically say, dude, get the hell out of here, or I'm gonna cut you up. You know, that should have been like we're not safe right now. And you know, I can't assume that everyone's gonna be on my side. So yeah, I would say he is pretty naive for having this attitude.
I mean, I went back and forth because on one hand, I was like, you know, Yoren's just a man of procedure. Like, he's done it the same way. He's used, like, he probably knows Lady Wynn. You know, she's been, you know, whatever her name was. She's invited him in before. Like, they, you know, he's eaten at her table before. You know, like, in his mind, it's just like, oh, yeah, like, this is the way it is. You know, we're not enemies of anybody. We're not supporters of anybody. We're just public servants. But considering that he literally watched madness go down in front of his eyes, he watched Ned Stark get executed, and then since then they've basically been chased. Like, you got to move on past the way things have always been, taken into account the current political climate.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
No,
I think the thing most frustrating to me was that he keeps mentioning it, like, in 30 years I've only lost two boys, and then this, you know, this trip I've lost how many, and like he just keeps mentioning like things are so different, but he still expects the same outcome.
Right
Yeah, he's not adjusting to the changing scenery right now. And the thing is, I mean, in the past 30 years, I don't know if I can, I'm trying to remember my history and everything. Okay, the rebellion was like 14 years ago, right? So I guess he has been. I guess he has lived through a war.
He's lived through some stuff, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he has lived through a war, and I'm curious. I don't know. Was it like COVID-19 situation? Where it was like, hey, you're staying up here for now because you know we're quarantined. Yeah, we're quarantining you up. I'm curious if Yoren did go out during that time that Robert's Rebellion was going on, or was it just like, dude, like everyone's killing everybody, like let's just ease up here.
Great question.
Yeah, because the thing is, this whole thing that's happening, that's, you know, hasn't started officially, but it's brewing. Well, and I guess it has started. This war that started right now, he was out recruiting when it started. You know, right. So I'm curious. Like, I'm kind of curious now if, like, when Robert's Rebellion started, if they were like, hey, let's just not stress about it. Like, they're gonna need every man they could possibly get right now. So, who knows? That's maybe he never lived through something like he never experienced that. As
he never
a recruiter.
Did his job during
mm-hmm.
a war. Yeah,
exactly. Right. So that's a possibility. Let's see. So just going back to kind of the beginning, let's see. There, I had a couple notes I want to say. One thing I want to say, once again, I love the unity in this band of just random guys. I mean,
band of misfits.
Yeah, there you go. That's the word I was trying to say. Yeah, this band of misfits. Like, literally, Yorin's like, hey, do X, do Y, do Z. And everyone's like, all right, let's do it. Bam, we're going to go find food. Bam, we're going to go set this up. Hey, let's go hunting. Let's check for boats. You know, there's no, like, really complaining about it. And I don't know if that's... I think I mentioned this before. I don't know if that's an unrealistic thing and George just wrote it like, okay, I don't want to talk about complaining. I want it to actually work. Or if it's just like, hey, we're in a survival situation. We're putting aside all the crap. We're just going to do it because we need to, you know?
I think a lot of these guys, this is their first chance of ever actually having a chance to be a part of something and feeling a sense of belonging. And, you know, for some people, it's like, oh, the worst thing that could happen to them. But for some people, it probably isn't. You know, it's like, wow, you know, I get to be a part of something bigger than me. I get fed. I have a place to go. And even though the Night's Watch isn't what it used to be, it's still somewhat of a status that they would have never had on their own. So maybe they're just kind of excited to be a part of something.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great explanation to it. You know, having a sense of purpose, kind of like what Sam's doing right
Sam,
now.
Sam, yeah.
Yeah.
Right? No, I like that answer. Let's see. I also had, oh, okay. So here we go. Here's a question.
Ooh.
So when Yorin was chatting about going to Harrenhal, Arya basically sees a light at the end of the tunnel here. She's basically like, oh, if I get there, I can reveal myself to Lady Wendt. There's probably knights there. They're going to take care of me because that's what knights do. So
this is okay, twice now she's acting like Sansa. And
okay, so we've probably discussed this before. So here, I want to ask, and maybe we've said this before, but it's been 41 episodes. I can't remember everything. So why is it that when Arya goes into this sort of fantasy world and believing that, you know, this is how things are going to be, you know, and we're like, ha, Arya, what the heck? When she does it, it doesn't really annoy us. But when Sansa does it, we're all like, oh my gosh. She...
Speak for yourself. Too stupid, I don't you know? Sansa to be annoying.
That's true. Well, the general A Song of Ice and Fire.
The general consensus, yes.
The general consensus is that I personally don't find Sansa annoying anymore. I actually enjoy her chapters very much. Yeah. But,
I think she's naive, but I didn't find it to be grating or anything. I was just that's what she's always been raised to believe. I mean, she was surrounded by good knights.
I'm just curious what the difference is, because like no one in the community has ever been like, oh yeah, I read the scene where Arya thought a knight was going to take care of her, and God, it was so annoying. I hated it.
Right.
Dumb and naive and everything.
That's
so
a good point.
So I'm just wondering, like,
double
what
standard?
Yeah. Right. I'm just wondering, like, what's the difference of it? Is it just because Arya is more of like a tomboy,
Brooke pointed out that like she saw the girl crying and she was like, oh my God, stop crying. And like we see Sansa do that and we're like, that's kind of cold, you know, like, geez, like Jane has been sobbing for days. Like, I get it, but you could have a little bit of grace with her. When Sansa's just like so annoyed at the crying, and then Arya does it, and we're like, "Hey, she's so badass!" Like,
that is wow. That's so true. Yeah, I think
a big part of it is the age difference. Like Arya, as much as she's out there killing all these men, Arya's 9. Like this whole chapter, this little 9-year-old.
Like, you guys, I have a 9-year-old. Well, she'll be 9 next month, but it's like, I can't imagine her like being like Arya at all.
Right. Well, I think part of it might be this whole like, you know, Arya's a girl, but she, you know, has a sword and she's, you know, kind of a tomboyish at this point. You know, she can handle herself. She's confident in herself. And with Sansa, we look at her and we think, oh, she's a helpless, you know, she fell in love with Joffrey. Maybe that was it. Maybe it was just because she liked Joffrey.
Maybe so.
With Sansa, it's a personality trait. With Arya, it's a moment of vulnerability.
That was good, Brooke.
Thank you. That was deep. I probably was the same myself.
That was, yeah, wow. Whew. Take a step back. But yeah, it's just, it's really interesting just to, you know, these totally different reactions to these two different people, but they're basically doing the same thing. So yeah, I would honestly say, yeah, part of it is because Sansa, the reason why the general consensus is Sansa's annoying in the first book is because she was so infatuated with Joffrey. And right. we as yeah. the reader know that Joffrey is terrible bullshit. I mean, he drives us crazy. So it's just like, so oh true. My gosh. You know, how didn't she read the first book? Doesn't she know how bad he is?
Didn't she like live this or something?
Yeah, like... right. What the heck? Let's see. Looking through my notes, I had a couple little things. One of them, so a frequent description that Grimm has used throughout these books is he describes things of nature as having fingers. If you read back to the first, the prologue, it actually talks about the trees reaching toward each other with fingers. In this, there's another moment like this, there's two actually in this chapter. One of them is the piers on the lake reach toward the center, wooden fingers, and then it talks about the fire in the barn as having fingers of fire. And I was trying to contemplate why this was happening, and the one thing I came up with is this. In past North of the Wall, there's this whole Children of the Forest magic stuff going on. And that's actually occurring on the God's Eye as well. Just, you know, in the center of the God's Eye, there's this island where the stories tell that the Children of the Forest and the First Men, that's where they met together and basically made the pact and decided to end this war and, you know, set up the territory, figure out how they could live peacefully. Mm-hmm. And then to seal the pact, they carved a weirwood face on every tree in the God's Eye, and they left these people called the Green Men on there to sort of protect it. And so my thinking is that there's this, you know, this old god, Children of the Forest magic going on. So at the God's Eye, maybe that's just a slight sort of, I feel like it sort of makes nature sound more alive, giving it human features, showing that it's actually, you know, reaching towards each other with these wooden fingers, you know, like I'm curious if, you know, I'm sure I think that's what George is trying to tell us. Like, there's something in nature that's been alive, you know?
Right. Like, there's a magic to it more than just it being.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Let's see. So there's that. I noticed that Gendry was still polishing his helm. God, like, polish his helm. Let's see. Also, I just want to state, poor Hot Pie. I mean, is it just like, Arya's literally there just like, you know, sharpening a needle, and he's all like, hey, where'd you get that sword? That's pretty cool. Sweet. And Arya's like, yeah.
Straight into a trap.
Yeah, pretty much. I think Arya's like, yeah, my brothers have a lot of swords, and they totally effing kill you, you know, blah, blah, blah. I like the description. It's like he threw up his arms, and he, whoa, bro, like, I was just asking a question.
Yeah. Cool sword, man. Didn't know it was gonna trigger you like that.
Pretty much. And then also I liked how Jack and Agar is, like, super polite while everything's burning around him.
A man can fight!
It's getting a little hot in here. You know? Jeez, so I thought that was pretty funny.
It's reminding me of Monty Python. Like, not quite dead yet.
Yeah.
Don't forget me.
Oh, okay. And here's my last little. Yeah, and then I just remembered, Madison, you said you got something really awesome. You know.
Oh, that's right.
I wouldn't say it's really awesome.
Oh, okay. Here we'll downplay it. Yeah, I heard Madison had like some little thing. I don't know what it is.
A little thing.
Yeah, I don't know whatever. So when Arya was. She drew the second watch. She went to sleep, and I believe she had a dream where she heard Powell, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious if that was a message sent by Nymeria, because they got rid of Nymeria, not on the God's Eye, but on the Trident, which is, you know, in the general vicinity, sort of that area. So and we know that pretty much all the Starks have a connection with her, and I'm curious if this was Nymeria to wake her up. So
I feel like it was, because it wasn't just the fact that she heard a wolf howling in the dream. Like, when she woke up, she was insistent that something was happening, something, mm-hmm. somebody was coming. Like, I do feel like there was a connection there.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree, too. I feel
I
like...
I wish she had leaned yeah. into the wolf connection a little more. Like, not to be, like, a total spoiler, but in the Wheel of Time, there is a character who has a strong connection with wolves, but not one specific wolf, like, you know, Nymeria and Arya or Ghost and John, but, like, he communicates with wolves, and I just wish they had leaned into that idea a little more, of her being able to just kind of, you know, not warg or talk to them, but, like, wolves around the area could sense that someone who is really connected with, you know, in their presence, mm-hmm. they are able to kind of communicate with her about, you know, just like a heads up or whatever.
Yeah, I would say I think the part that's a little tough in this book series when it comes to that connection, that there's no, like, rules or boundaries that are established. Right. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like when you read other, you know, when you read, I don't know what it's like in the time, but I feel like when I've read stories about characters who have connection with animals like that, it's almost like there's rules and boundaries set. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, yeah, what can occur here. But when we get these wolf dreams, happens a lot with Bran. We do get them with Arya later in the book. It's almost like you're reading it and halfway through the chapter, you're like, oh, that's what's happening.
Yeah. Hold on
mm-hmm. a second. And you have to go back and reread it and, like, okay, now this is from the perspective of this. Because I feel like it's not like I'm going to connect with Nymeria now. You know, right. Like, I got right. her now. It's
not telegraph or something.
Yeah, it usually always comes in these, you know, when they're sleeping in these dreams. It's almost like these connections are happening without without them purposefully doing,
like,
it.
Like, subconsciously.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I think maybe that's why
it seems strange. A ton of fantasy series. I will say that is one thing I really do appreciate in my books, and will start to look for, is really strong connections with animals and, like, strong animal sidekicks. I love that. So that's probably why I find myself kind of wishing it was a little more clear defined and he had just embraced it a little more. I mean, don't get me wrong, the A Song of Ice and Fire has some awesome animal characters in it, for sure. But oh, yeah. That's, like, a thing that I'm always like, more of that.
Yeah, I like that. All right, I think we got to know what your exciting thing is, Madison. I'm just dying.
Oh, well, what? So do you remember when we were reading, or not reading, the other thing we do, watching Game of Thrones, and we noticed one particular episode that had this amazing flow to it, like how it would go from scene to scene, but the way it transitioned, it made sense. Like, there was, like, do you remember? I don't remember which episode it was. Do you remember having that conversation?
No, mm-hmm. I totally remember this conversation.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I noticed that happening in these chapters. So, like, in Dany's chapter, it was very heavy with Jorah telling his backstory. And, like, he was talking about Bear Island a lot. And she talked about how she was going to give Jorah his rightful place in the North back to him. And then we transitioned into the North. And then John is... I highlighted exactly what he said here. But he was thinking back to his family, but instead of just thinking about anybody, he thinks about Arya. What he said
when he was doing his hands movements, yeah, like his hand painting,
and he thinks, ah, ugly things. He remembered suddenly how he used to muss Arya's hair, his little stick of a sister. He wondered how she was faring. It made him a little sad to think that he might not ever muss her hair again. So he's thinking about Arya, and then we transition into Arya's chapter. So I thought it might be kind of interesting from here on out to kind of pay attention to see if there's any more of those subtle hints at where we're going next in the previous chapter.
Yeah. Well, I feel like
good
that's catch. That is an awesome catch. I feel like that's something he, for him to make this book work, I feel like that's something he almost has to implement at times. Right. Because we're jumping so, like,
otherwise it's just jumpy. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Well, like, not only are we jumping characters, we're jumping scenery. very often.
Worlds,
I mean, yeah. Yeah, right. I mean, we were just in Essos at the beginning of this podcast. We jumped all the way up to the north past the wall, and now we're down by the God's Eye. And then next chapter, we're going to head to King's Landing with Tyrion. I mean, it's just, you know, I feel like he has to, I feel like that was probably, right. I don't know, in my brain, I don't know, maybe he's like super smart and had this planned out, but in my brain, I'd be like, okay, how can I connect these chapters so that it doesn't feel so clunky?
Right. Well, it's the first time that we may have talked in the last book too some, but for some reason, this is the first time I was really like, I can really feel the transitions and it feels natural, but I can see that it's there and I like it.
Mm-hmm. Almost definitely. No, yeah, great catch. That's all the notes that I have on this chapter. Brooke, did you have anything else you wanted to share?
The only other little thing I had was that I'm interested to see in Arya's next chapter if someone calls her out for saying Winterfell as her battle cry over and over again.
I thought
because it made a point to say that she said it like 3 different times. So I was like, there's a lot of emphasis on this. I wonder if somebody's gonna notice that she said it. So
by the way, why Winterfell?
Yeah.
you know, it's kind of interesting that you bring that up because when she's having that conversation with Hot Pie, she kind of lets her guard down a little bit and she's you know, she's chatting with him and everything, and then she's like, oh wait, I gotta remember. So I wonder if it's just kind of a natural thing. She's spending all this time with these, you know, with this group of people. She's starting to trust them. Maybe, you know, she just naturally let her guard down and when it hit a point of high emotion, you know, during the battle, maybe it's just like, okay, all these lies and all this cover up they're gone now. I'm just trying to survive here.
Right.
And if screaming Winterfell during a battle is going to help me survive, then I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I also, once again, I love that Hot Pie yelled Hot Pie because it just kind of reminded me of when Tyrion was in one of his first battle in the mountain heading towards the Vale with Catelyn and Bronn and all that, and he's like, yeah, I should stand up there and I should yell Casterly Rock to fight, and then he's like, yeah, never mind, I don't want to fight, never mind, I'm gonna go
yeah.